I'm trying to put together what I believe about God. He is sovereign. He is good. He is holy. He has really good purposes. And my life is really hard. And like, I don't know if I can do this.
Welcome to Family Life Today, where we want to help you pursue the relationships that matter most. I'm Ann Wilson.
And I'm Dave Wilson, and you can find us at familylifetoday.com. This is Family Life Today. Let's talk about a topic we all need to talk about and we all need to do, but a lot of us don't understand.
Yes.
That's how I would introduce.
Is that your little tease?
This topic. No, I mean, we got Mark Brogop talking about something that you think is really important for the Christian community to understand. And right now, everybody's like, what is this? So I'm going to throw it to you. What is it, Mark?
We're here to talk about lament. The language that God's people have historically used and is all over the Bible of how you pray and talk to God when life falls apart.
And there you go. We'll see you next week.
There we go.
I feel like people haven't been using that word until recently, but we've all done it. We've all experienced it. But why do you think it's important now? Like, because you're writing about it, you've experienced it.
I have. Yeah, for most of us, we don't set out on a academic discovery of the language of lament. For most of us, lament finds us. We have an event, a situation, a pain, a tragedy. And when a Christian's walking through that, they're trying to figure out, how do I grieve and still cling to what I believe? How do I cry, but how do I hope? And the prayer form that we end up experiencing is lament. And for most of us, this category explains like what's happened in the past or explains what we've been trying to do. That was my experience. Yeah. And after writing Dark Clouds of Deep Mercy and talking with so many grieving people, the overwhelmingly consistent comment that I hear from people is, your book just explained the last couple of years of my life.
Wow.
So lament usually finds us because we're not familiar with this language, and yet it's a grace. It's all over the Bible. Think of this, 1 out of every 3 Psalms are laments. God intended for us to have this language, to talk to him when life really gets hard. The challenge is that for many of us, we haven't heard about it, we don't know it, but when it's explained, we go, oh, that's actually what's been going on. And in doing so, we find some amazing grace.
You know, it's interesting. I watch you all over the internet. You know, we do our homework and research. And, you know, you made that comment about a third of the Psalms are lament. A lot of our worship singing in church are the Psalms. Have you ever heard any lament singing worship songs? It's very rare, isn't it?
They're certainly out there.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, the percentage of laments in the Bible do not reflect the percentage of songs that we sing. And I don't know that, I mean, I don't want to say 1 out of every 3 songs has to be lament in its orientation. We also don't hear lament-oriented prayers. And as a result, we're very unfamiliar with this language. Instead, for most of us in a Western American version of Christianity, we think that the standard of what it means to be a Christian is always positive and encouraging.
Hey, Mark, I got to tell you.
You getting out your guitar right now?
Here we go, here we go.
Okay, for those who can't see this or just going to hear it.
This is why you need to watch this.
I'm not kidding. I was watching you preach somewhere. It might have been at your church. I don't know where. And you made that comment that there aren't any worship songs that are sort of based like the Psalms. And so I thought, I'm just going to go. And you were referencing Psalm 77. So literally an hour ago, I opened up Psalm 77, and I'm in our bedroom, and Ann's like, you're not going to do that on the air.
And Mark's face is like, what is happening?
I really don't know what's happening right now.
So, right now. Yeah.
I'm actually going to pull my camera out and take a picture of this while you do this.
So, okay,
here we go.
Has this never happened in an interview?
This has never happened, probably in the history of mankind. So this is the moment right here. So, yeah, that's awesome.
Here's the thing, I don't even know where it's going to go.
Okay, those are the best songs.
But I literally opened Psalm 77 and I thought, when I remember God, I moan. That's a lament.
My moan.
When I meditate hesitate, my spirit faints. Has a steadfast love forever ceased? I'm probably getting too happy so far.
No, you're not. You're doing a great job, actually.
Are his promises at an end for all time? And then you can just feel him. He's got to be like, has God forgotten to be gracious? Has he in anger shut up his compassion? Then I said, I will appeal to the years of the right hand of the Most High. I will remember the deeds of the Lord. Yes, I remember your
wonders. Oh, this feels a little more up now.
Well, he's getting
well, he turned, yeah.
I will ponder all your
Wow.
Anyway, that's what came to me this morning. I'm like, there aren't songs written like that. I don't know if anybody'd sing that at church, but.
Yeah, I'm actually pretty emotional. And I just wish a lot more people would do that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, seriously, those words. Are
Mark,
so
will you
important.
Read it? Read it. Like, that, at least the beginning.
That is not the response I thought it was going to get.
It's actually. It's the vision of why I wrote Dark Clouds of Mercy is to have that happen.
Yeah.
And I couldn't do what you just did. Mm. I mean, I thought you were joking. Like, that was legit. That was an amazing song. And yet it's so important because we are very unfamiliar with the kind of words that you've just sung.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, here's what Psalm 77, I mean, it's 20 verses. You want me to do them all? Or you want me to
do them? No, just the beginning, you know, do the ones that you resonate with.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's just, I cry aloud to God, and he will hear me. In the day of my trouble, I seek the Lord. In the night, my hand is stretched out without wearying, but my soul refuses to be comforted. When I remember God, I moan. And when I meditate, my spirit faints. Behold, my eyelids open. I am so troubled, I cannot speak. I consider the days of old, the years long ago. I said, let me remember my song in the night. Let me meditate in my heart. And then my spirit made a diligent search. Here's six rhetorical questions that would freak most people out if anybody prayed them in a small group.
Mm.
Will the Lord spurn forever? Will he never again be favorable? Has his steadfast love forever ceased? Are his promises at an end for all times? Has God forgotten to be gracious? Has he in anger shut up his compassion? Then, here's the turn. Then I said, I will appeal to this, to the years of the right hand of the Most High. I will remember the deeds of the Lord. So he's taking those rhetorical questions that he knows aren't true, but they feel true. And that's the thing with laments is there are things in life that feel true that you know aren't true. And the question is, what do you do with them? And lament is the answer. You pray them. You talk to God about them. You sing them. I will remember the work of the Lord. I will remember your wonders of old. I will ponder your work and meditate on your mighty deeds. Your way, O God, is holy. What God is great like our God?
Mm.
You are the God who works wonders. You've made known your might among the peoples. You have redeemed your people, the children of Jacob and Joseph. And then this is my favorite part. When the waters saw you, O God, when the waters saw you, they were afraid. Indeed, the deep trembled. The clouds poured out water. The skies gave forth thunder. Your arrows flashed on every side. The crash of your thunder was in the whirlwind. Your lightnings lighted up the world. The earth trembled and shook. Here's the money passage. Your way was through the sea. Your path through the great waters. Yet your footprints were unseen. You led your people like a flock by the hand of Moses and Aaron. So the reason why that concluding part is so important is because in the Old Testament, the signature redemptive event was the Exodus. And that's what he's talking about there at the end.
Yeah.
And so he takes his heart back. He takes questions like, has God forgotten to be gracious? Is he shut up his compassion? He takes all of that mess and he brings it back to the most foundational truth that he knows, which is God delivered us. We're his people. He led us through the Red Sea. And in the New Testament, that moment is the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. And so laments eventually lead us to the bedrock of our faith, which is the man of sorrows can handle our questions. He can handle our pain. He's the one that prayed on the cross, my God, why have you forsaken me? Psalm 22, pray to lament. At the end of the day, our hope is that Jesus bought the right to make it right. And lament is the language that helps us get to that point that we can again say, that's true. I'm really struggling, and sometimes I have doubts, but this is true. So laments, as I define it in the book, they are prayers in pain that lead to trust. So that there would be more people who would write songs like that, because I think there are a boatload of people in our churches who need to know that, A, they could sing like that, as far as saying those words, and B, know that this is actually a pathway that leads to hope. It's not a cul-de-sac of sorrows where we just are always stuck in our grieving.
That's a really good
point.
This
is a conduit that leads us to mercy and grace. So that's why that's a really remarkable moment to have that kind of song out of Psalm 77. And to think of this, that for generations, that this was the songbook. And that's what they did. They put to music the very words of God. And think of that. One out of every three songs that are sung have that kind of tone, despair, difficulty, and yet so full of hope.
All of us, every single listener is experiencing pain at some point in their lives. And if it's not right now, it will be in the future.
Right.
One out of three Psalms, probably one third of our life, if not more, is really hard.
Yeah. I don't mean to be, you know, cute when I say this, but I do think it's helped to kind of reset people's expectations.
Yeah.
If one out of every three Psalms are songs of lament, you might think that one out of every 3 days of your life, you're going to have sorrows or difficulties. Mm. And I think part of the reason why lament is not a language that a lot of Christians today understand, at least in the spaces in which we live and operate, is because they have a wrong view of what the successful Christian life looks like.
Yes, especially in America.
Right. I mean, you can go globally and find believers who understand lament as an intuitive language. And you can look at American history. If you were to find the genre that expresses lament in American music history, look no further than African-American spirituals.
That's what I was going to say.
So when people are in a hard place and they feel like there's no hope in this world, this is the language that they use. And it's so incredibly life-giving, both as individuals and for an entire corporate gathering of God's people.
Yeah, you know, when you said that, I was thinking, when I came to Christ in college, I don't think anybody told me this. I just perceived now life will be easy and good. It'll be awesome. If my mentor had said, hey, by the way, you just signed up for every third day, get ready for a hard struggle that God's going to prove himself to you. I'd be like, wait, I'm not signing up for that. But that's
what I signed up for.
And you think Jesus will just make it all smooth and it's going to be easy, the prosperity type gospel. And it's like, yeah, that's not what you sign up for. You sign up for a real struggle with Jesus in the boat.
Part of the reason that I'm passionate about this subject is not just to help people who are grieving or to explain a biblical category. But one out of every 3 days being difficult isn't just a Christian experience.
Yeah.
That's a human experience.
Right.
So it seems to me that Christians ought to be the best interpreters of pain, sorrow, and difficulties. Like, this is our language. And we know the story, the redemptive arc of creation, fall, redemption, restoration. We know the story. We know that there's coming a day when we won't sing laments anymore. Like, I don't know what songs we're going to sing in heaven.
Know.
You know, I mean, it'd be pretty cool if I'm Keith and Kristen Getty and we're singing In Christ Alone in Heaven, right? Imagine your song. Like, it made it into the top 50 with the angels, right? Hey, there's this guy who wrote this song. We're going to sing it together. I mean, imagine that. But there's a whole genre of songs we won't sing anymore.
Yeah.
Because our faith will be sight. Our sorrows will be no more. But in the meantime, this is our language. And this is our moment to say, look, the Christian faith can handle death, sorrow, and the most difficult questions. And in fact, this language is a means to help us in our long and sometimes difficult pilgrimage.
Take us back to when lament became a new language.
Dark clouds.
Yeah.
Take us to the dark clouds.
Yeah. So we have twin boys. My wife carried our twins to 39 and a half weeks. And then we had another son. She carried him full term. Beautiful pregnancy. No problems. Like, so for us, pregnancy equals easy.
Yeah.
Our third pregnancy, a few days before delivery, my wife woke me up and said, something doesn't feel right. Baby hasn't moved, I don't think. And I'm going to jump in the shower. And there's a bigger backstory. It felt like the Lord had been preparing me for suffering of some kind. And I began doing some study and some reading on suffering at a deeper level. She got in the shower. I dropped to my knees and said, Lord, please not this. Well, sure enough, we get to the doctor's office and they put that little thing that you hear the baby's heartbeat. And longest 3 minutes of my life as the doctor is just searching. And I'm like, God, please, please, please. Let's just hear that sound. That there was just deafening silence. We go into the ultrasound room and see our baby in the womb, and he puts it over her heart. And he's like, I'm sorry I tell you this, but her heart has stopped. Your child has died. And it just rocked my world. And so then I fast forward to some things. I mean, my wife has to give birth to a deceased child, has to go through all the things of labor. And then we have a couple years of multiple miscarriages, even one where we thought we were pregnant, numbers were going up. We go into the room to see the heartbeat. This is supposed to be celebration day, only to have in the same room with the same doctor in the same chair, him say, I'm sorry, but you have a blighted ovum. You've caught a miscarriage before it's happened. And in the book, I talk about that's when my wife and I went to our car in the parking lot. I asked her if she could pray, and she said, I'll try. And she said, God, I know you're not mean, but it feels like it today. And what is that? That's a lament.
Yeah.
And then we finally got pregnant again, and it was the longest 9 months of our life because I lost the husband card to say, honey, I'm sure nothing's going to happen, because it had.
Yeah.
And so that 9 months was just a battle to believe and trust. And today, by God's grace, we have a 19-year-old daughter, Savannah, who was born after our stillborn daughter, Sylvia. And as a pastor, I'm still preaching and teaching, and I'm marrying and burying, like all the things, right? And I'm trying to put together what I believe about God. He is sovereign. He is good. He is holy. He has really good purposes. And my life is really hard. And like, I don't know if I can do this. What if my wife's never happy again? You know, what if this is the last story, is death and a grave? And so I'm in between these two worlds. And then I find that Christians are really unintentionally unhelpful. They're trying to paper over our pain or our questions with, well, God can trust you with this. I'm like, okay, well, it doesn't feel like I can trustworthy. Yeah. Or maybe more people will come to Christ. Well, that'd be great, except I'd rather have a living daughter, to be honest.
Yeah.
I mean, so people were like, not helpful in kind but ill-informed ways. And so I started just to wrestle with this. How do you live between the poles of a really hard life but trusting in God's providence and his sovereignty? How do you live with two of those things? And I found that in most Christian experiences, it's either or. Either life is all bad, God's dealt me an unfair deck, or it's we trust in his sovereignty and we ignore how painful it is. So I started teaching.
That's what I did.
Yeah. It's what most I think many Christians do.
Yeah.
So I started teaching on it, exploring this a little bit. And then I was like, oh, wait a minute. What's been going on in my life all these years is lament. That's what it is. And I didn't have a category for it at the time. I was just trying to survive, trying to live out my theology while in pain. And so I started teaching on some of the darker Psalms. I taught through the book of Lamentations. So this book came out of real world conversations with hurting people who after service were like, hey, like, is there anything else on this? I need to explore this further. And eventually I got so tired of saying, I really don't know that there is. That's when I decided I need to put this into some kind of published form. And the title, Dark Clouds, Deep Mercy, comes from the juxtaposition in the book of Lamentations, chapter 2, the Lord has set us under a dark cloud. And Lamentations 3, the steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. His mercies are new every morning. I think the Christian life is lived in the tension between those two realities. Dark clouds often, always deep mercy, and there's grace for the in-between time. Mm-hmm. It's our language of lament.
I'm just teary about the whole conversation just because I know so many people that have suffered so much. I mean, I'm just imagining like the couple that we know that their baby was just stillborn. And here's the thing that happens. I've seen so many people walk away from God.
Oh, absolutely.
As a result. And I'm not sure how to encourage them.
Yeah.
What would you say to that? Like, there's so many that if this is who God is, I'm out.
Right.
Is it because we haven't learned to lament? Is that, what is that? And how can we encourage them or come alongside them?
Yeah. So two things on that. Number one, I think you've had Garrett Kell on your program here. So Garrett told me, he and our friends, that he had a an intern who made an incredible observation. He connected some dots for me.
An intern.
All right. Yeah. They were reading this book and they said, you know, I think some people deconstruct their faith because they don't know how to lament.
Oh, that's so true.
And he was like, one of the hardest things is if you've had pain, but you don't know what to do with it, you begin to think that Christianity isn't legit. I was like, wow, that's actually really, really helpful, because I think pain creates a tension point of how do I live with the fact of what I believe and what my experience is doesn't seem to match. The answer for that person is God is good and life is hard. And those two things actually coexist in the Christian faith. Some people think that in order for Christianity to be real, those two things have to reconcile.
Yeah.
But in the Bible, they don't reconcile. They just are. And the Psalms of Lament show us that in the exact same psalm, the psalmist can say, how long, O Lord, Psalm 13, have you forgotten me? Will you forget me forever? And then four verses later say, but I have trusted in your mercy, I will sing. It is the fact that Good Friday and Resurrection Sunday are both a part of the Christian faith. And so part of it is helping people understand that if you think that Christianity is only resurrection, then you miss that the cross was necessary. If you think Christianity is only the cross, you miss the resurrection hope. You have to have both. And the Bible has words and language that describes that. And so, like, for your friend, I would say, listen to these words in the Bible. Save me, for the waters have come up to my neck. Yeah. Like, the Bible actually empathetically understands the pain that you're walking through in a variety of kinds of brokennesses in the world. And pain tests what it is that we really believe about God. Some people think that lament is to be faithless. It's actually one of the most faith-filled things that you can do. And it's one of the most theologically informed things to do because, and I think this was Todd Billings who said this, it's precisely out of our theology that we offer complaints to the Lord, because if we believed that he wasn't good or we believed he wasn't sovereign, then why lament? It's just the normal thing of life.
Yeah.
Bad stuff happens, get over it, live free, die, like just party, whatever, because life is filled with no connecting dots. But if the psalmist believes that God is good and he believes that he's sovereign, then the world in which he lives doesn't fit with his knowledge of who God is. That's precisely why the psalmist takes the complaints to God and says to him, this is hard, and yet I know you're good, but these don't mesh. They don't reconcile. And I think that vision of Christianity is really important, because some people think that once you come to Christ, you just have all of the abundant life. And that is not the story. By much suffering and tribulation, we enter the kingdom.
I love that you played a song and wrote a song for Mark today.
Yeah, I never thought he would respond that way. But it shows you the power of lament. And, you know, that's the book he wrote, which is called Dark Clouds, Deep Mercy, Discovering the Grace of Lament. And I tell you what, it's a book that you want to get.
I have bought three of them and I've given them away because I think this is a really important and needed topic. You can find the link in the show notes at familylifetoday.com.
Show notes, familylifetoday.com. Click that link, get the book.
Before we're done today, I just want to remind you that our vision at Family Life is every home a godly home. And we need your help to get there. When you become a Family Life partner, your monthly support makes that vision actually possible.
And listen to this. If you join the Family Life Partner Program, you'll get access to exclusive updates and events and the chance to join our partners-only online community. But more than that, you'll be teaming up with us to change the future of families. So the question is, will you stand with us?
And you can learn more and become a partner at familylifetoday.com. Just click the donate button at the top. Again, that's familylifetoday.com.
Family Life Today is a donor-supported production of Family Life, a Crew ministry, helping you pursue the relationships that matter most.